Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Codex Magica by Tex Mars right after this. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if your carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. Nielsen is a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say. He said, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real, honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, educational, informative, and free. Courtroom strategy and procedure. Our school is available on compact disc for home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Codex Magica by Tex Mars, a big compendium of information concerning the secret organizations of the world. And, of course, the number one secret organization here in the United States, and then from there extended worldwide, is the Masonic Order, or the Order of Freemasons. The question arises, why do these members of the Illuminati do what they do? What's their motivation? What is it that they're up to? What are they trying to achieve? And Tex Mars asks that question in Chapter 2. He says, why do the Illuminati do what they do? Well, after many years of research and investigation into their behavior and conduct and understanding their goals and ambitions, I'm fully persuaded that these men fit the definition of psychopathic personalities. They're psychopaths, and as such, they're afflicted with the dangerous malady called megalomania. Now, here's how Webster defines these words. Psychopathic personality is an emotionally and behaviorally disordered state characterized by clear perception of reality, except in the individual's social and moral obligations, and often by the pursuit of immediate personal gratification in criminal acts, drug addiction, or sexual perversion. A person having a psychopathic personality. Megalomania is a mania for great or grandiose performance. It is a delusional mental disorder that is marked by infantile feelings of personal omnipotence and grandeur. In sum, the psychopath possesses a clear perception of reality. He knows full well what he is doing. But he refuses to abide by society's morals, and instead he pursues personal gratification in such things as criminal acts, drug addiction, and sexual perversion. Combined with feelings of megalomania, the psychopath has visions of his own omnipotence. He thinks that he is God. And his delusions of grandeur. Since he is persuaded he is divine and not bound by the rules that apply to others who are less godly beings, the psychopath is a dangerous person. Indeed, Dr. S.E. Whiting of the Institute of Psychiatry at the prestigious King's College in London, England, has done extensive study of the motivation and behavior of the psychopathic personality. Dr. Whiting cautions that psychopath shows a lack of remorse, conscience, and understanding of the feelings of others. He sounds like a psychological description and profile of a lot of our world's foremost political and corporate leaders of today, now doesn't it? Now, frustrate the unbridled ambition of the psychopath, and he strikes out in a controlled yet insane fit of rage. If the psychopath holds a position of great responsibility, let's say President of the United States, or dictator of a technologically advanced nation, he can do some real major damage. William Krasner, in an article way back in 1946 entitled Neurotica, warned of the dangers that lie ahead for societies who fall into the grip of the criminal psychopath when he wrote, "The psychopath is a disruptive, parasitic, immoral influence. Any group, while it may for various reasons support and even honor the psychopath, in direct proportion to the extent that the psychopath is tolerated, that his attitudes find support in the culture, the pattern, to the extent it is an unhealthy society. Tragically, America has actually become a dangerous haven for mentally disordered psychopaths. The Council on Foreign Relations, an Illuminist organization whose 3,000 members run almost every facet of our federal government, especially at the highest levels, is no doubt populated by a majority of psychopaths. The Masonic Order in the United States has some 2 million initiates who have voluntarily undergone occultic-laced rituals to be accepted as common brethren. The ranks of the Masonic Order are loaded, I believe, with dangerous psychopaths. The United Nations organization, endorsed and funded by our Congress, is a seething cesspool of unrepentant psychopaths. Psychopaths are inveterate liars and deceivers. In fact, they lie on an Orwellian scale. If confronted with a situation in which veracity and truth are a prerequisite, the men who run America's federal government, or who sit as CEOs of this nation's top financial institutions and corporations, have the psychopathic talent of looking the citizenry square in the face and then insisting that 2 + 2 = 5. Being deceivers and practitioners of the craft, witchcraft, the psychopaths who lead the inner circle of the Illuminati are more than capable of standing before the cameras and working magic and occult ritual right before our very eyes, pretending all the while that they are simply acting normal as usual. It has been said that if one really wants to hide a great secret, he should conceal it in plain sight. Well, this maxim certainly applies to the disordered, but somehow illogical behavior of the men of the Illuminati. It is not rational to do what these men do in public in plain sight, yet they do it and expect to get away with it. And they do get away with it. Well, or at least they did before this book was published, revealing their unseemly scripted ritual behavior. Now, why all of this occultic ritual rigmarole in the first place? Why do some of the world's richest and most influential men and women take the risks that they do in working their demonic magical acts in plain sight so that they are pictured doing it in major news magazines and newspapers, on television, and in other avenues with huge potential audiences? Edgar Allan Poe, the famous novelist of dark mood and mysterious suspense, once wrote a tale, Perverse of the Imp, in which he suggested that criminals often have an overwhelming, all-consuming desire to publicly confess their devious crimes. Could it be this is why the Illuminati so flagrantly flaunt their occultic wares in public? Is it that they possess a unique taste for deceit and chicanery? Or is the performance in plain sight accomplished because it is believed to infuse power and mastery into their sought-for aims and goals? Do they simply enjoy mocking and tricking us, the commoners? Teasing and playing with our minds, realizing that the vast majority of people in society are willing dupes? It was, after all, serial killer John Wayne Gacy, certainly a psychopathic personality, who once bragged that a clown could get away with murder. Gacy, you see, enjoyed dressing up as a mischievous and gleeful clown and visiting hospital wards to cheer up young male patients. He also took great pleasure in the confines of his home in torturing and killing young boys. All of these are reasons why psychopaths of the Illuminati pose and parade occultly in front of cameras, exchange ritual handshakes, and otherwise taunt the public. Remember, according to Webster, the psychopath is immoral, selfishly flaunts social or societal mores, is infantile in personality, is delusional, and has feelings of grandeur and omnipotence. Men who think they are omnipotent gods must take extreme delight in putting things over the masses, whom they consider to be inferior and subhuman. Now, moreover, after long and careful consideration, I propose that in addition to these factors, there are at least 12 other reasons or factors why the Illuminati persist in their seemingly delusional and infantile behavior. Each of the 12 reasons is represented by one of the keywords listed below. That is, secrecy, magic, building, power, pride, elitism, signal, wealth, to please, invocation, encourage, and rebellion. And it's important that we examine these 12 keys to understanding why the Illuminati do what they do. We have already covered the topic of the elite's obsession with secrecy in Chapter 1. In the following sections and pages of this present chapter, we'll look at the remaining 12 keys. So let's begin with the Illuminati's employment of magic to accomplish their ends. Everybody loves magic and a good magic show. Magic is defined in the New Encyclopedia Britannica as ritual performance or activity believed to influence human or natural events through access to an external mystical force beyond the ordinary human sphere. This is an exceptionally accurate description of what magic is, and reveals to us exactly why the Illuminati consider magic of such extraordinary importance in the accomplishment of their aims. That magic is an occult activity is also indicated in the New Encyclopedia Britannica. So we're not talking here about magicians playing parlor tricks or entertainment extravaganzas, pulling rabbits out of hats, or sawing beautiful girls in half, being chained in an aquarium full of water and then escaping. Instead, as the encyclopedia so well puts it, magic is ritual performance. It is an occult ritual. In this occult ritual, the magician, the illuminist, believes he can influence human or natural events. So in Codex Magica, we see pictured the Illuminati giving secret signs, sharing concealed grips and handshakes, displaying symbols and communicating hidden messages. We realize that in performing these magical works, the Illuminist actually believes that he is influencing human behavior or otherwise causing real events to occur in a particular planned way or intended manner. Magic happens. It is a popular slogan among witches, occultists, and Illuminists. Things change, reality is transformed, alchemical transformation occurs, society is shaped by occult planning. However, to accomplish these aims, this shaping of society, the Illuminist, as an occult practitioner, fully understands that he is accessing, as the encyclopedia definition explains, an external mystical force beyond the ordinary human sphere. Now, the Illuminist may imagine that he is merely accessing the cosmic energy force, or that he is tapping into a fourth dimension, or the ethereal atmosphere. Thus, he may well lay claim that his magical work or activity is benign, that it is simply white magic, that is, good magic, the right-handed path, as the Satanists and other occultists call it. But, as we shall see, the highest authorities in the occult world admit that there is no essential difference between white magic and black magic, the supposed bad, evil, left-handed path. Magic, after all, is magic. Who or what, then, is the Illuminist accessing in his ritual performance of magic? From my many years of research and investigation into the works and plans of the Illuminati, witches, Satanists, shamans, masons, and other occultists, I declare without hesitation that what these men are doing knowingly, in some cases, unwittingly in others, is calling on, that is, invoking devils and demons from an invisible realm beyond the ordinary human sphere. The occult and the Masonic communities can call these evil presences by any cover-up name they wish. The Great White Brotherhood, Shambhala, planetary entities, the hierarchy, but in real fact, the working of magic, I am convinced, is nothing less than the invocation or inviting of demons and devils. This indeed is a very dangerous activity, severely proscribed by the scripture. And yet the Illuminati has designed its many rituals, signs, codes, symbols, architecture, art, and other devices, so that the world around us has become a veritable grand theory of the occult because of the Illuminati. The whole world is enchanted, dark with supernaturalism, and the one the Holy Bible calls the Prince of the Power of the Air, also referred to as Satan, and Lucifer, the devil, the great dragon, must be very proud of his human minions that he controls. The second word, build. You will find pictured in Codex Magica a variety of different types of people. There are the celebrities and the rich and the famous, the glitzy or the jet-set people who are into illuminism, occultism, and witchcraft because it's trendy and it's fashionable. Among this group are some who are into the Jewish Kabbalah, movie and Broadway stars, singers, entertainers, activists, and so forth. These are often ignorant people who are used by the Illuminati to extract money for sex and as novelties. When the money runs out, they grow old or too old for use as sex partners, or the novelty wears out and they're often cast out or retired and no longer have access to the inner circle of the elite. Then there are the do-gooders. These are people who support revolution, and the socialistic, globalist, environmentalist, and similar aims of the Illuminati for what they fancy is the good of society. Sometimes these people sign up for Kabbalah classes taught by the rabbis. They eagerly join liberal social issue organizations and may also be involved in the secret societies and orders, though at a lower level. Again, we see these people are mere dupes. Then finally, we see several strata of Illuminati elite, major politicians, and bureaucrats, including presidents, prime ministers, chancellors, as well as some corporate CEOs and financiers, media moguls, and many others. These are major players, but again, they are dupes because there is a secret, invisible, arcane, or hidden inner circle which works behind the scenes and tells these major players what to do. This higher level of the Illuminati elite have historically thought of themselves as the builders. There is even a classic Masonic textbook by this very title. The builders believe that Jehovah God did Adam and Eve a disservice by driving them out of the garden. And they rankle at the fact that Nimrod, the king of Babylon, was confounded in building the Tower of Babel. And they are seized with rage over the destruction of their temple in Jerusalem. Indeed, the builders are angered that every time they have sought to bring the world together as one, they have been thwarted by this God. All of their chosen disciples, the Caesars and Charlemagne, Napoleon, Hitler, Stalin, Franklin D. Roosevelt, Mao, saw their grand plan of conquest go down to resounding defeat. But still, they strive to complete their assigned mission. Now it is the New World Order, or George Bush's Democracy for All Nations. They have in mind to build a world of democracy. The United Nations is to be reformed, that is, strengthened, and the few rogue nations that remain must be dealt with and destroyed. The economies of all of the nations must be equalized, enterprise extinguished, constitutions amended or ignored, private property seized or regulated severely, religions transformed. These are the real goals. In other words, to build their new world order, the elite intend to destroy the existing old world order. The old must go to make way for the new. It is the Hegelian dialectical process that is being used to achieve this prime objective. What is above must become what is below, states the Illuminist law of alchemical transmutations. J. Robert Oppenheimer, the Soviet spy who oversaw the Manhattan Project, the building of the first atomic bomb, and was present when the humongous mushroom cloud rose with its imploding plumes of fire, is said to have exclaimed, "I am become the destroyer of worlds." Few realize that this is a quote right out of the Hindu scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita, and it was supposedly from the Hindu sun god, Krishna. Oppenheimer, who was a Jew, appointed to his august scientific position by 33rd degree Mason Franklin D. Roosevelt, was deep into the occult and was a Kabbalist magician. As Michael Hoffman II and a few other keen-minded observers have pointed out, the atom bomb project, the transmutation of matter into intense forms of energy, was long an alchemical objective of the Illuminati magicians. And like the Hindu god who represents them, it is the fondest desire of these wicked nihilistic men that they become the destroyer of worlds. And then, from the burned-out carcass, like the phoenix rising from the ashes, is to come the new city of glory, the kingdom of the Illuminati, ruled by their god, man, king, and his master, Satan. This is the ultimate, all-consuming, repugnant goal of the builders, to undo what God has done, to defile and utterly destroy planet Earth, and to rebuild it in their own image. The prophetic scriptures tell us that this grandiose plan, the great work of the Illuminati, will never fully come to fruition. The kingdom shall not become the province of the rebellious Illuminati and their dark occult master, Satan. Here is Almighty God's glorious declaration of how it shall end in its finality. And the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven, saying, The kingdoms of the world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of His Christ, and He shall reign forever and ever. And the nations were angry, and thy wrath is come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou should give reward unto your servants, the prophets and the saints, and them that fear your name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth. Now that's recorded in Revelation 11, verses 15 and 18. God's incomparable will and plan shall prevail in the final analysis. And the Messiah and his people shall reign triumphant forever, and the evil shall be judged. And what of the Illuminati, the destroyers of the earth, the ones whom Satan's servant Oppenheimer trumpeted were the destroyers of the world? The scriptures give testimony to their fate. They too shall be judged, so that God should destroy them which destroy the earth. Third comes power. The hunger for power motivates the human disciples in the Illuminati structure. Because they serve Satan, they intrinsically know that they are serving the will of his human hierarchy. They expect to be rewarded for this service to the evil side. George Bernard Shaw, who maintained an overwhelming hatred for God and for Christianity as a whole, wrote of a will incarnated in higher consciousness, man, the elite, that shall finally mold chaos itself into a race of gods. To fancy yourself as in a state of becoming divine, as do superhuman, special and superior, you shall achieve elevation as one of a race of gods, is an intoxicating prospect. Do as you please. The Bible says of the Antichrist, he shall do according to his will, Daniel 11:36. Aleister Crowley, head of the occultic order Ordo Templi Orientis, prided himself on being the wickedest man on earth. Crowley preached that Satanists had only one commandment, do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Only gods can do as they will. That translates into awesome power. Changing reality by the force of one's will is, in fact, the very essence of magic and of witchcraft. F. Astor Barnwell, in his sinister book, The Meaning of Christ for Our Age, equates superior human will with God consciousness. Through development and exercise of will or magic, says Barnwell, a man may live forever as a god. Illumined by occult knowledge, the person is able to utilize pent-up psychic energy forces to affect material reality. Barnwell refers to this psychic energy force by the Hindu term Kundalini, or serpent power. A man possessing serpent power is said to operate in a spiritual realm, and as such, he is immune to and beyond any human spectrum of morality. Whatever he wills is good, based solely on the results, and not on any relative moral scale. In essence, the ends justify the means, and in such a relativistic theology, black magic is no less or immoral standing than is white magic. Black is white, bad is good, good is bad, white is black, and all things are reversed. Oh, how thrilling to the egomaniacal Illuminati is the realization that they possess and wield such awesome power within the planetary realm. Power is addictive. Former Secretary of State and Illuminati insider extraordinary Henry Kissinger once smiled and confided, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. to communicate ultra-secret coded visual messages of an evil and conspiratorial nature to each other, or to the whole group by way of the world's most influential media, with no fear of being reprimanded or of even being punished for the crime, must indeed be akin to ingesting a mind-altering, soul-satisfying aphrodisiac. These men lust for power, and conveying secret messages unintelligible to the ignorant masses must give them great emotional delight. It inspires in them the desire to accomplish even greater occult aims. William Shakespeare once wrote that the world is mine oyster, which I with sword shall take and plunder. And yes, the world is their oyster. And some in the Illuminati, in the hierarchy, are so infused with a carnal ambition and lust to power, they even seek to conquer and reign the starry realm beyond the surly bounds of this planet. It was British colonialist plotter Cecil Rhodes who once declared, "I would annex the planets if I could." Somewhat less grand and pretentious in his ambition for power, but nevertheless worth recalling, is former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, so full of himself, sitting at the top of the heap in the U.S. Congress, that he once told an audience, "My goal is to shift the entire planet, and I'm doing it." Well, let's pause right here. Let me give you a mid-course reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website, again at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend will necessarily reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, back to Codex Magica. Now, if you'd like to get a copy of Codex Magica, there's a bookstore in Austin, Texas. They're at 1904 Guadalupe in Austin, Texas. The phone number is 866-516-6623. It's called Brave New Bookstore. Brave New Bookstore, 1904 Guadalupe in Austin, Texas. The phone number, 866-516-6623. Or you can go to the computer and punch in www.bravenewbookstore.com. That's bravenewbookstore.com. Looking here on my tout sheet, that's brave is one word, new is the second word, and bookstore is the third. Looks like it's Brave New Bookstore. It may all be one word, or it may be three words. I can't tell you for sure. Ordinarily, they're just one word run together, Brave New Bookstore. So if you're looking for underground books, this bookstore has a wide variety of underground literature that if you can't find it anyplace else, they'll find it for you. Now let's take a look at pride. A perverse sense of false pride is a major factor that motivates men to be active as Illuminati operatives and to communicate by secret handshakes, secret signs, and by other occult media. To smugly conceive of oneself as superior in enlightenment, in class status, in social connections, and in other artificial aspects is common to the elite. The promotion upward of the initiate degree by degree is purposely designed to create the impression that he is gaining knowledge forbidden to the unenlightened. Multitudes outside of the order cannot understand what the initiate understands. It is a system of awards, jewels to be worn, covert handshakes and cryptic signs shared also reinforces the ideology that the individual is special and that he is superior. To be pictured in a nationally circulated news magazine is ego-building enough for the Illuminist, but to identify with members of an exclusive and powerful secret organization by purposely giving a secret hand a sign in that picture and realize that only other elite are in on the joke, so to speak, that can indeed engender a rush of perverse satisfaction and haughty pride. The attitude is, ha, aren't we pulling one over on them? What control we have over the masses. What swill they can be made to swallow. Jim Keith, a first-class conspiracy researcher who some believe was murdered by the elite during what was supposed to have been a minor surgical procedure on his knee, believed that the perverse satisfaction and exaggerated pride of these men is a natural outgrowth of their keenly observing how much control over others their elite status confers upon them and their associates. This is especially true given the Illuminati's control and manipulation of nations like the United States, Russia, Germany, nations with vast technological prowess that fosters the growth of Big Brother government control. And he writes, beneath the cloak of the prime conspirators are large groups of rich peasantry and landlords dominating a huge mass of poor serfs and less than serfs whose labor and lives are sucked to provide the lifeblood to nourish the upper portions of the pyramid. This ancient structure is perfectly visible to anyone with the eyes to be appalled. It is also obvious that the ruling class cabals and spy organizations which we do know about are pointed in roughly the same direction. The total control and utilization of the mass of mankind by whatever means it takes, aside from all of the lofty banter about the perfecting of mankind, what is desired is the perfecting of the systems of control. Control is the shared goal of these numerous conspiring individuals, groups, and governments, and in that sense they work together, collaborating here, working individually there, creating an evolving noose of murderous technological expertise that swiftly tightens around humanity's throat. With this goal in place, with money and tools of advanced technology in hand, the overall program of accomplishment begins to crystallize. Now, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Exaggerated self-absorbed pride becomes especially evil and dangerous when prideful men acquire power. It was Lord Acton who in 1886 uttered the well-known maxim that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. Unduly prideful men are imbued with that unrighteous temperament because they often have unfettered access to power, and that is power over people, power over organizations, or over natural resources, or over whole nations. Power to reward, or power to punish chosen disciples, friends, or enemies, even power to take life. The best of historians now admit, for example, that President Franklin D. Roosevelt and his corrupt Masonic associates knew in advance of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor that catapulted the United States into World War II. The Illuminati wanted World War, and the American airmen, soldiers, and sailors who died on December 7, 1941 were considered necessary to precipitate the USA's entrance into World War II. The United States government also had prior knowledge of both the 1993 Oklahoma City bombing of the Murrah Federal Building and the 9/11 bombing attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon. The massive loss of life was no obstacle as far as the elite were concerned. Their cold-blooded agenda is calculated to engender chaos and destruction in a never-ending alchemical process of bringing order ab chao, that is, order out of chaos. To the elite, murder is business as usual, and so once again we discover that a moral vacuum is inherent in the minds of these men of perverse pride, which now takes us to elitism. Closely linked with the perverse and exaggerated pride is the corrupt reality that the men of the Illuminati do indeed run most things in society. They, after all, are the elite, and unfortunately they are afflicted with elitism. They do receive unfair advantage and exalted status in society. Sadly, the dumbed-down masses adore the men and women of the elite. Elitism is a sickness. It is a disease. The men and women who are pictured in Codex Magica giving secret signs and sharing covert hand grips no doubt enjoy a smugly satisfying sense of perversity in knowing that they are deceiving those whom they are persuaded are the ignorant and the unknowing multitudes. Now, the elite and the Illuminati are themselves divided by rank and authority. There is a hidden inner circle, followed by a several hundred member core. Next, we have perhaps 3,000 to 5,000 in a larger circle of influence, and then finally, another 10,000 puppets. The latter group, the puppets, have no real influence on matters of importance. This group includes celebrities, media representatives, educators, and others who are only vaguely aware that an elitist global conspiracy even exists. They simply know that they must hew to the party line. The puppets also realize they must maintain a strict form of political correctness by promoting globalism and the approved socialist agenda. They are required to rigorously adhere to the script provided and continue to loyally wear the individual mask that they have been supplied. John Swinton, a newsman and former editor of the New York Tribune, once shocked his audience at a luncheon meeting of the press by boldly professing that there is no such thing in America today as an independent press. You know it, and I know it. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents and our possibilities and our lives are all the property of other men. We, he said, are intellectual prostitutes. And I said that in 1880 at a convention or a meeting of journalists, and he absolutely outraged everybody there. Now, if this newspaper editor back in 1880 said that the press is manipulated and controlled and we're nothing more than jumping jacks being manipulated, we're intellectual prostitutes, where does that leave Dan Rather, Brian Williams, Katie Couric, Time, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, USA Today, the New York Times, the Washington Post? Now, Swinton appears to have known very well that the careers and activities of his peers in the media are strictly controlled and regulated by their elite masters. And this rankled him. But then, after Swinton's comments that day, little was ever heard again from the man. Now, as Michael Hoffman II once sagely noted, the analogy of insects often resides in the true tale of the initiates of secret societies and orders, and this is because these men are themselves deceived by Lucifer, and so they go about deceiving others. Thus, there is a group mind resident in all of these people, whether an Illuminist is a member of the inner circle or a lowly puppet. It is for this reason that Professor Adam Weishaupt, the co-founder of the Classical Order of the Illuminati, on May 1, 1776, called his sect the Beenan Order, or Order of the Bees. Jim Keith, in Mind Control and UFOs, also noted this hive mentality. Keith wrote that in the South American country of Colombia, there is a German community which even today, over 60 years after World War II, uses the swastika as its icon. This group calls its compound Hormiga, in honor of the obedient worker ant, yet another form of Illuminati insectoid. So, we find the beehive or anthill as an apt metaphor for the servants of the Illuminati. It's fascinating to realize that these people are servile, weak, and crawling little personalities. They echo in unison the words of Yes Master to their superiors, the potentates of the various secret societies and orders. The underlings of the Illuminati, in effect, are abject and craven cowards, groveling in fright and terror before their Illuminist chieftains, and yet they act in public as though they are superior beings. Oh, so special, and hoity-toity, as the saying goes. Believing in their own inflated self-worth, they themselves consider themselves members of a higher level caste while categorizing the masses outside their group as like so many cattle or sheep, even as useless eaters. Such is the distorted view of the Jewish Illuminist who derogatorily referred to Gentiles as the Goyim cattle. The late Dr. Israel Shehak, professor of Hebrew University in Israel, a man I respected greatly, was a constant critic of such a deviant superiority attitude. Shehak noted that many Zionist Jews are unashamed and advocates of human slavery. The Israelis have resuscitated a book in Spanish by Jews dating from the 14th century, which has been adopted for use as a manual of religious instruction in Israel's secondary schools. And it explains why non-Jews ought to be the slave of Jews, because Jews are the elite of the human race, and because of this, they deserve to have slaves, and these slaves must be non-Jews. Now, this outrageous and imperious attitude does not take those of us by surprise. Those of us who have studied the Jewish Talmud, or the rabbi's holiest book, according to the Talmud, Gentiles are not even to be considered humans. The Goyim, or the Gentiles, are not men, but they are beasts, cited in the Talmud in Baba Mezia Fol, number 1146. It should be further noted that the Encyclopedia Britannica says the Talmud is still the authoritative and practical guide of the great mass of Jews to this day. From the 9th volume German language translation of the Babylonian Talmud in the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. Now, slaves and beasts, that is what the Zionists of Israel consider those who aren't Jewish. Now we discover what the elitist favored sons of the Zionist Illuminati think of you and me and the masses in general. No wonder they kill without conscience through their instigation of world wars, through initiation of regional conflicts, and through assassinations and other criminal deeds. The elite plot and carry out heinous terrorist acts and institute financial crises and cultural upheavals to force the Hegelian dialectical process along its desired path toward a new age and a new world order. Deaths are acceptable losses. The Illuminati reason that pain and suffering are necessary for requisite changes to occur in society. In any event, since those outside the order are relegated to the lowly categories of slave and beast, why wring one's hands or otherwise unduly concern oneself with whether such miscreants as you and me live or die? The Malthus principle suggests to the Illuminati that periodically thinning the global population is a good thing. Evolution, they believe, calls for the survival of the fittest, and they view themselves as superior and the most fit to live and to rule. Elitism is certainly a disease, a mental disease, and those afflicted with it experience no guilt whatsoever in performing magical rituals of all kinds to enhance and accentuate their elite status and signal their superior knowledge to their occult peers. Next, we come to signals. When you scan the pages of this book, Codex Magica, and you immediately discover that the conspirators of the Illuminati have a deep, dark desire to signal each other. They seem to be obsessed with flaunting their special ties with each other as well as their membership in the brotherhood of the elite at large. Could it be that these men sharers of occult secrets and sharers of crimes also share a joint consciousness and recognition of their mission as individual members of a commonly shared destiny. Well, I believe, personally, that that is the case. In Conscious Evolution, Dr. Barry McWaters acknowledges his commonality, his attempt to unify on the part of the insiders, each of which he acknowledges make a unique contribution. In this way, the differential parts come to recognize that our common task is a transhuman task, a goal beyond ourselves. Now, McWaters notes that many people have opened themselves to serve as channels by their individual acts of performing rituals, including the communication of signs and symbols which embody intense energies and are magical in effect. There is expected to arise a transformed humanity, creating a new heaven and a new earth to manifest itself. In effect, the co-conspirators are performing a psychic form of magic by the combination in the ethereal world of millions of ritual acts of individuals. It is believed that a collective transformation of mankind and of Earth will take place. When a critical mass is achieved, a quantum leap in consciousness will spontaneously occur. The catalytic process of magic on a mass scale, continuing scale, will help push this process along to completion. Then, and only then, will the universal mind, long a cherished goal of the elite, be fully realized. Meanwhile, the co-conspirators believe they are mass conditioning humanity and helping to build archetypes of energy forces in the collective consciousness that tend to create a binary, dialectical process of chaos that will result in the Hegelian achievement of equilibrium. This, they are convinced, will catapult the world into a global-wide Zionist state ruled by an enlightened dictatorship made up of Masonic overlords who wisely rule and are beyond good and evil. In effect, the co-conspirators are persuaded by each other that a cell or molecule playing a certain role within a greater organism, their deceit is to imagine themselves an energy unit or snapshot within a holographic universe in which all things are related and are one. Further, not only is there one unity, but there are unities within unities within unities, but of course at the top of their unified pyramid is the controlling entity with the all-seeing eye that indisputably is Lucifer, or Satan the devil. After all, it is Lucifer who rules in these occultic organizations. All right, we are reviewing Codex Magica by Tex Mars. We'll take it up right there next time with Wealth in What on Earth Are These Illuminous Thinking Anyway, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.